So at 5:07, I will call the program committee meeting to order. We will start with the approval of the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I motion to approve the agenda.
And I second it. Moving on to the meeting minutes from October 12, 2021. Is there a motion to approve the meeting minutes, which are located on page 3 through 7?
I motion to approve.
I second. So at this time, comments from the audience may be made on items not listed on the agenda that are of public interest and within the subject matter jurisdiction of the district. The committee has a policy of limiting speakers to not more than 3 minutes. The committee cannot take action on items not listed on the agenda. Public input may be offered on an agenda item when it comes up for discussion and or action. Andrea, are there any public comments at this time?
No, we have no public comments.
Okay, thank you. So we will be moving on to old business, clear impact platform and results-based accountability update. And it's an informational item. Who will be speaking on old business?
I can do that. So as you know, the board has approved that we would like to go down the road of results-based accountability. And Clear Impact has a platform to provide that to allow us with our grant making and plug in our strategies with our strategic plan to develop measurements and outcomes and dashboards and scorecards. So Megan and I had a preliminary meeting with Clear Impact last week. Or was it this week? I don't know. I can't remember. So we met with the one of the trainers, and he walked us through a little bit about what Clear Impact would do. And we had given him our strategic plan. It was after the board meeting had approved it on the 26th. So he looked at our strategies, and we had another meeting with him where he just did a draft workup of what a scorecard would look like, how we would put our strategies in, and then our performance measures underneath. And again, they're just drafts. These are just ideas, but just for us to get an idea of what this would look like and how we, when it comes time to learn how to do this stuff, meaning whether or not our results are working, our outcomes are working, we're turning the curve, our curves are turning. So with that information, Conrado and Alejandro, Megan and I will be meeting a little bit more in-depth basis next week with Clear Impact. So Conrado and Alejandro can get an idea of what we're looking at and what training would be involved, the time frame, and go from there. Does anybody have any questions? Megan, did you want to add anything that maybe I missed from our meeting with Dan?
I think that summed it up. Still trying to just figure it out and get all the details in order before presenting something a little bit more concrete.
Okay, thank you.
I need to explain platform.
It's the software. It's the measurement tool. It's a tool that we will use when we develop a dashboard and then has a scorecard to measure how are we doing, where are we going, we're going in the right direction. So it's like a grant making platform, any kind of CBHIP is a platform, anything that's a tool that helps us determine which way we're going, what we want to measure, manage, etc.
Thank you. I didn't want to assume that's what it was.
Yeah, thank you.
No further questions, that's it.
Conrado, did you want to add anything?
No.
Okay.
You summed it up.
Okay. So hearing no further questions, we will move on to the funding request updates. They're located on page 8 to 12 of the packet. Does anyone have any questions about this?
Give me a second to scroll up to page 8 again. No, I didn't have any questions about this?
About none of the funding requests? I mean, on page 8-2. To 12?
Really, yes. Is it possible to share with us a little bit more of the UCR SOM?
That's the School of Medicine. And we've been reviewing, we're going to be setting up a proposal conference with them to get a little bit more information. It is a nexus to mental health and how they want, we're kind of confused what restorative circles are. We want to get a little bit more information about what they're doing. I think it might be an offshoot of what their mini grant is working on now, where they're working on mental health and trauma care for farm workers and Latinx impacted by COVID and the mental health problems that they may be having. So it's going to be a little bit more, I think, expansion on that. But we'll know more when we have a proposal conference with them, because again, sometimes these LOIs don't give you as much information as a proposal conference does. So stay tuned.
Thank you. Just to mention that we do have a couple of different restorative circles. Some people call them healing circles out in like the Indio Coachella area. It's been part of like the Alianza Building Healthy Communities, Danza, work that has already been happening in some of the Latino communities out in the East Valley. So just putting that out there for staff.
Okay. Yeah. I think Alianza does some of them with their trauma-informed care and Yeah.
And they've been, I don't know if they're still doing them at the schools, but I know that there was some work being done at our local Coachella Valley High Schools a while back. Couldn't tell you what's happening today.
Okay.
So just figured I'd share.
Yeah. I know they'll be working with the promotors again as well. So doing some training with the promotors on the restorative circles.
And those are all my questions.
Okay. And since I don't have any questions, we'll move on to number 3, the grant payment schedule located on page 13 of the packet. Does anyone have any questions regarding the grant payment schedule?
One question and a couple comments. On the JFK grant, it says that they still have, never mind, I was reading this incorrectly. I was reading the pay to date as their balance. Their balance is only $5,000. It's not a question anymore.
Okay.
What I was curious about JFK, sorry, let me scroll down to where I was. What was interesting about this proposal was their two story narratives on page 23 and 24 kind of helped me understand a little better a portion of their programs, just putting it out there that I appreciated that like little blurb. I did have a question about the blood bank. It was more related to their COVID antibody work. They talk about it as being successful on page, I believe it's 30. Our COVID testing and CCP testings were so successful. Do we have more information about, I don't know what they mean in this last paragraph. I don't know if someone can like translate it over.
The last paragraph saying regarding goal 3, starting with that one.
On page 30 of our packet, it says our COVID testing and CCP program were so successful, we were able to fully support the COVID convalescent plasma needs of all seriously ill COVID patients in the Coachella Valley.
So what they've been doing is they have been extracting plasma from the blood donations of people that have had COVID. And then Conrad, you can help me out being the doctor. I believe that that these were monoclonal. They were getting antibodies, right, from the people that have COVID and injecting them in the people that currently had COVID that were very sick and it was kind of reducing the symptoms and they were getting not as severe.
Yes, convalescent plasma is one of the most effective way of extracting antibodies from nature. In this case, someone who was infected and was successful in combating COVID. So they have strong antibodies. So you take plasma or you take a good amount of blood, you extract plasma from that blood, and then you concentrate that plasma, which is rich in antibodies. And that is then transfused into a patient that is sick with COVID to give them the immunity they don't have.
Is the vaccine switching this?
Not necessarily. Some people that have had the vaccine have strong immunities and others do not. That's why we have breakthrough infections. So this might be still being used in certain cases. And even with the use of monoclonal antibodies, those are very effective in early stages, but in late stages using convalescent plasma is your best tool to fight a COVID infection. So this is still valid. It's still a good protocol to treat someone who is very ill with COVID-19.
Do you all think we'll see another similar grant from them?
This grant was mainly for to help purchase a blood mobile that's needed throughout the Coachella Valley. So, and actually they are going to be putting forward a request that the money that they had from left over from other testing that they would like, it's about 26,000. They would like to either put that towards the continued purchase that we have with them with the agreement, or they wanted to put it towards buying an Alex machine that they put onto the bus. So they're going to be working up how much, what would be their preference. And that this will be coming to the program committee in December and board, because it would be a line item change. So.
Okay, thank you.
But to answer your question, I don't think they would be, because we're still midway into the other grant, into this grant yet.
Okay. Thank you, both of you.
You're welcome.
My last comments are just on the Mizell grant. In their goals, one of the things that we sort of did not discuss in our strategic planning was like geriatric care and young people health, period. As big as that word can be. But on their page 33, in their goals 1, 2, and 3, they share some pretty good information about the people that they saw, things like income, different types of chronic health conditions. So just putting that out there for us to just keep in the back of our heads as we continue working on not just grants, our strategic plan and other things. And that's it. Those are all my comments on this. Once again, thank you, staff, for just compiling all of this information, making it legible and making it all the same, because it's easy to keep track of.
Great. Thank you for your questions.
Thank you. Having no other questions, we will move on to program updates. On pages 14 to 46, you'll find the program, the progress and final reports updates. Is there any questions regarding this information? No? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to grant funding requests. Pages 47 through 68, number 1296, Coachella Valley Volunteers in Medicine, improving access to healthcare services for $154,094. Who will be speaking on this?
I can do that. So Coachella Valley Volunteers in Medicine is asking for a grant, as you see, for $154,094. It's a two-part grant in some respects. They are partnering with the Housing Coalition of Coachella Valley to open up a mobile pop-up clinic for telehealth in Desert Hot Springs and Mecca. And part of the funding will pay for a part-time medical assistant who will be working with the communities in Desert Hot Springs and Mecca, signing them up and getting them connected to the telehealth where there's a nurse practitioner or a volunteer physician on staff at Volunteers of Medicine in Indio, taking all the vitals and setting a course for case management and other kinds of healthcare courses. The other part of this is the continuation of what we have funded them in the past, where we have a lot of uninsured and undocumented clients that come to Volunteers of Medicine, and to continue payment for their services because everything it is the only free clinic in the Coachella Valley. And Doug Mora from the executive director is with us tonight. If you had any questions or comments, Conrado and Alejandro and I did have a meeting with them and toured the premises, and we are saying that this is the nexus to goal number two, access to healthcare, with our new strategic plan. So one of the first ones to come in on our new strategies and goals. So Doug, if you're there, or if anybody has any questions.
Okay. Carol, do you have any questions? Karen, sorry.
I don't have any questions, but I would like to hear from the director if they have any comments to share with us.
Okay.
Doug? Can you speak? There you are. He's got his hand raised. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I just unmuted myself. Can you hear me now?
There you go.
Yes.
Yep, we can hear you.
I think the thing that makes this unique from some of our earlier grants is that we really, during the pandemic, I speak of it as though it's over, and we all know it isn't, but we really did an awful lot to bring technology into the clinic so that we could provide some telemedicine or telehealth visits. And so what we want to do is, now that we have that equipment and we want to go ahead and work with one of our medical assistant who's currently working part-time with us, and she would be on-site at remote locations, as Donna said, to work with the individual patients in those locations, collect any information that's needed from them, take copies of verification eligibility documents, etc., and then using a laptop, set up a connection with a provider that would be in our clinic. We know that in all instances, that's not going to work well, that sometimes the medical provider will need to see and touch the patient, but at least initially, for that first visit anyway, and depending on what the patient's complaint is, then they should be able to do that. And from there, then they can order all the labs, x-rays, et cetera, that they feel may be necessary, and then schedule a follow-up with that patient, either another telehealth or telemedicine visit and or a visit at the clinic.
Thank you very much.
That's all I would have to say.
I guess I do have a question now, Doug. If your telehealth visit did require someone to visit you at, I'm assuming, your Indio facility, do you all have means of transportation if someone does not have transportation access?
So what we do is we have a donor supported fund that provides gift cards that can be used for gasoline. They can also be used to help pay for childcare if that's what the needs are. So we have that. We don't have an Uber ride share or anything like that. We tried that. It didn't actually really go over very well with our patients, but the providing them with a gift card that they can use however they need to usually has worked pretty good at this point. And then we strategize with them on work with them to see if there's a family member that can bring them. Is there a neighbor? So we'll do an awful lot of suggestions to try to get them out there to the clinic.
I guess that really was my like only concern, right? If you're in Mecca, you might get folks from North Shore where the bus only stops a certain amount of times and it takes 3 hours to get into like just Coachella where you're at, right? So just time and transportation access. However, I appreciate, I think some of the staff comments, the review comments also shared that you have like a diverse pool of funding for this program. I appreciate that you're like on both ends of the valley. So that's also just great. I motion that we approve this grant to go to the board.
I second that motion to forward it to the board.
Well, I'm not sure if I have to say all those in favor.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, so this grant will be forwarded to the board for approval. Moving on to committee member comments. Are there any committee member comments at this time?
There's like a lot of events and stuff happening right now with a lot of these partners. There's like a way for like sponsoring any, if we are, sorry, not partners, people that we're granting, if it's appropriate and when it's appropriate, if you all can invite us to anything that might be happening, just to show our support beyond just like monetary funds to some of these folks, that'd be great. But that's my only comment.
Okay, thank you. Hearing no more comments, we'll adjourn the meeting at 5:29 and we'll go directly into the foundation meeting.
I'm sorry, I would like to make a comment.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Dr. Perez Gil. Mm-hmm. We had a meeting today of the strategic planning committee, which Karen is a member of. And, you know, in the schedule of grant applications that we have received, there's a couple of grant applications that we received that we decided, because they are not in the strategic plan as a high priority, they're rather on a moderate priority, that we will be discussing those at a later time. So just to make sure that we have that on record, and those items will be coming back to this program committee at some point, but they merit probably further discussion amongst all board members.
Okay, thank you, Contrada.
Okay.
Are there any more comments to be made before I adjourn the meeting? Hearing none, I'll adjourn the meeting at 5:31 p.m. and we'll move on to the foundation program committee. So I will call to order the meeting at 5:31 p.m. Is there an approval for the agenda?
I motion to approve the agenda.
I second. Is there a motion to approve the meeting minutes from October 12th, 2021?
I motion to approve the meeting minutes.
I second. We'll move on to public comments. At this time, comments from the audience may be made on items not listed on the agenda that are of public interest and within the subject matter jurisdiction of the district. The committee has a policy of limiting speakers to not more than 3 minutes. The committee cannot take action on items not listed on the agenda. Public input may be offered on any agenda item when it comes up for discussion and or action. Andrea, are there any public comments at this moment?
No, no public comments.
Okay, so we will move on to old business. The grant payment schedules are on pages 5-6. Are there any questions regarding the grant payment schedule?
No.
Okay, hearing none, we will move on to Coachella Valley Equity Collaborative, A, vaccination, education, and outreach. Is there any new information that I guess the staff would like to let us know about, or?
Yes, I would like to ask Alejandro to give us a brief update.
Okay. Yeah. Hi, committee members. Yeah, just a quick update on a couple of activities that we have started or have formalized here in the last couple of days. The first one being a community vigil. We at the Coachella Valley Equity Collaborative wanted to do a vigil in remembrance and in honor of those district residents, Coachella Valley residents that we have lost to COVID-19. So in collaboration with different faith leaders here in the Coachella Valley, we're putting on this vigil. It's gonna be Friday, November 19th from 5:30 to 8 p.m. We have confirmations from Father Gomez from Our Lady of Soledad, Pastor Rick Saldivar from Destiny Church, and we have another pastor from another church who are gonna be our speakers. We're also having some testimonials of community residents who have lost loved ones to the COVID-19. We're also gonna have a display of battery operated candles that are gonna pretty much light up the total number of residents that we have lost here in the Coachella Valley. So we will have that front and center. We're also gonna have some other entertainment. We're gonna have some danza azteca that is gonna be part of it. And we're also gonna be providing food, which are tamales. And luckily they're tamales because the city recognizes those as prepackaged food. So we didn't have to get a food service permit. Wow. So that was good. We do have a flyer that Will has posted on our website, and I've seen some of you that follow our district Facebook page and Instagram page have reposted it. So yes, and we have the promotoras doing outreach for that. So hopefully you could join us. It's going to be a really good event, and the message, well, our MC and is going to be B. Gonzalez. And we are asking the faith leaders to make a call to action to our community to continue to get tested and continue to vaccinate, you know, the children themselves, go back for their boosters, et cetera. So, and we also have reached out to their different media partners, and Will is handling that component of it. So to ensure that we have some media out there as well. So hopefully you could join us. On this other side that we're working on is, since now we are having a slow trickle of the pediatric Pfizer vaccine, this past Saturday we had our first vaccination clinic for pediatrics at CVUSD, where we were able to vaccinate 98 children ages 5 to 11 and 100 individuals over the age of 12. We have a series of, I believe, 7 events scheduled with Coachella Valley Unified School District. And we're also having a couple of events scheduled with Desert Sands Unified School District. The first one with Desert Sands Unified School District is going to be this Thursday, Veterans Day. And, you know, a lot of folks ask us why Veterans Day. And when I had the discussions with the school district leadership, they thought it was a good opportunity because the children are out of school and most of their parents, you know, it's a paid holiday for the parents. So they thought it would be a really good way for them to take, you know, to have time to take their kids to get vaccinated. So that will be the first one that we'll have with Desert Sands Unified School District. And then we'll have a series of other vaccination clinics in strategically split placed schools to ensure that our community has equal access to the vaccine. So we'll be rotating those vaccination clinics. Same thing with Coachella Valley Unified School District. We'll be having a vaccination clinic out in West Shores, Mecca, Oasis, Desert Mirage, schools, just to ensure that our community has different access points to the pediatric clinic, booster shots, or folks are just getting vaccinated for the first time. they'll be able to do so at one of our vaccination clinics. And that's pretty much it.
Thank you.
Will you have the opportunity to work with Doug Alejandro on the new pop-up clinics that they're going to be doing? And I don't know if Doug's still on or not in Mecca and DHS when they do their telehealth. I don't know, is Doug still on? Can't tell. Yeah, he's still
on. Oh, he's gone.
Oh, no, he's gone. Okay, never mind.
I'll make sure to include him in the flyers that we develop, but we tend to just have them strategically placed around the area. But right now, it's the big one is the school district. Sponsoring Unified School District is kind of doing their own thing. They're partnering with Albertsons / Costco to set up these pediatric vaccination clinics. So that's why you didn't hear me mention anything about Palm Springs Unified School District schools, which is great. You know, we definitely don't have the capacity to set up all these vaccination clinics without three school districts, but the largest one, Desert Sands, we're partnering with them. And also, the underserved areas where Coachella Valley Unified School District, has their district boundaries. So we're very happy with those two partnerships with those two school districts.
That's an interesting partnership, Albertsons and Costco.
Yeah. They were partnering with Desert Care Network initially, when it was 12 and over. And then they reached out to Albertsons directly, which is great. You know, the more hands are in the pot helping out, it's good for us. Yeah. All we want is to get them vaccinated. We don't care where they get it from.
Right.
Yeah. I'll say that I heard some gratitude from the CVUSD vaccination center that we have or are co-hosting at the school district. So just want to pass that along, right? People in the community are coming up to me and saying, hey, this was great. I'm glad you guys are working with the school district. So kudos to that. Also, awesome idea, the vigil, bringing in the congregations soon enough, the holidays come around, right? Dia de la Virgen, there's just these like really large religious holidays that come around and really allow people to have sort of deeper conversations on theology and social justice, if you want to put it that way, right? Or I don't know what's going on in la comunidad. So I think having a pre-event before Thanksgiving is just super, super smart of us. It's culturally appropriate, it sounds. So just want to give you kudos on that too. That's like really good thinking. And I'm glad that the congregations are joining in. There is, and I'm sure you've already shared this with them, but the Coachella Interfaith Table is really strong. There's also like a informal Palm Springs Interfaith Table, if you'd like me to pass along some of their information. They're like good friends, long-term friends, social justice leaders in the Palm Springs end of the world. We can share that information too if you would like. But other than that, good job. You guys keep going. No pardon.
Yeah, awesome. And just one other thing I forgot is the Farm Worker Initiative. So we started our first doses of booster shots for farm workers last week at Grimway Farms. We did two clinics back to back. The first clinic, we vaccinated 225 individuals. And the second clinic, we vaccinated 305 folks. So 60 of those were first dose vaccines. So we're very, very happy that we got 60 that were coming in for the first dose vaccine. So overall, like I said, it's all of these, events are trying to pick up a little bit of steam. And we know that starting, the late part of December, early part of January, we're going to have a huge influx once again of the farm workers that are going to start the podada de la uva, the trimming of the grapevines in preparation for the grape harvest. So I spoke with a couple of growers, and that's where they want us to focus a little bit more on, which is on January, late December. So we have a couple more clinics scheduled with the growers for the booster shots.
Your comments reminded me of two different things that I've been thinking about. As 5 and up are allowed to get vaccines, the in-home daycares, my mom has an in-home daycare, and they have like a very active union, a very active What's Up. But the folks that have almost like weekly communication with them is first 5. And then the migrant program at CVUSD, as you're starting to see those migrant farm workers, it might be good to just send them a flyer. Can you send this to your in-home daycares, to your kids, to your migrant students? That might be a good partnership as well. And might just
be And one more thing, all these things just keep popping into my head. You know, Will has been meeting, and we have been meeting, you know, with the youth council. And one of the things that we discuss is making these pediatric vaccination clinics a little bit more festive and a little bit less scary for the kids, you know, instead of seeing all of these white robes and all of these folks there. So we are going to have, you know, El Sol develop this great comic strip utilizing, you know, a superhero and Rona, which is the villain. So they have costumes, they have, you know, puppets that they do. So we're buying, you know, really fun things for the kids, like little superhero band-aids for them, a little button that says I got vaccinated. So we'll have like a little table, you know, almost like getting like a little bag of candies at a party or at a piñata. So they're going to be able to get that. And we're going to have like a little backdrop, and we're going to coordinate, you know, to have those superhero outfits come out, you know, at one of these events, so the kids could take pictures with the superheroes and all of that stuff. So we're gonna try to make it a little bit more of a fun environment for the kids, so they don't come and see all this commotion happening. Cause you know, this Saturday, there was a few kids that were kicking and screaming and yelling, and yeah. So we try to make it as fun as possible for them.
Okay, thank you. Are there any more questions on the Coachella Valley Equity Collaborative information provided? No. Hearing none, we'll move on to Behavioral Health Initiative update information item. Jenna, will you be discussing this?
Yes. Okay. Good evening, committee members. Since we last met, the Desert Healthcare District and Foundation's Behavioral Health Initiative has actually started having the actual convening of the working group meetings. Just as a reminder, each working group is focused on a singular item of need that was identified in our 2019 mental and behavioral health needs assessment. So the participation has been excellent. And by November 19th, all five working groups will have held their first meeting. So that will allow us to continue to convene monthly as we really now narrow our focus and develop strategies that can then be advanced to the actual steering committee meetings, which are chaired by our CEO, Camarado Barzaga, and Dr. Matthew Chang with Riverside University Health System Behavioral Health. So we're right on track and everything's progressing nicely. So I'm looking forward to being able to report in our next few meetings on the progress that each of those groups is making. But it's been highly collaborative, with a really solid representation from our stakeholder community. Questions?
Thank you.
If you have it in front of you, would you mind sharing what those work groups are?
Sure, sure. So there are five working groups. Four came right out of our needs assessment. So the first working group is focusing on improving access to services. And under that umbrella, it really includes everything from transportation barriers to eligibility to actual, you know, cost issues, making sure that non-traditional service hours are more available. And again, just being a lot more present for our community members. The second working group that came out of this needs assessment was education and stigma reduction. So that working group is really focused on, again, even if our community members have an awareness of services, what are the other barriers that prohibits them from actually accepting help or even taking those first initial steps to seek help? So in that working group, we're looking at everything from cultural competency challenges to linguistic challenges to understanding that there might be some family systems prohibitors and just making sure that that working group is able to really zero in on, first of all, what are those barriers and then what are some strategic steps that can be focused on to improve that connectivity and that linkage. The third working group that came out of the needs assessment is professional development. That working group is really taking a careful look at, first of all, how do we better tool the professionals in our community that come into contact with our community members? And, you know, granted, you're talking about public safety or first responders, but really that working group is looking at who are the other types of individuals who may be coming across community members who may be at the onset or have a need related to behavioral health and how to properly have them trained so they can help achieve that linkage. Usually the prohibition to helping is feeling like if you're not a licensed therapist or you're not a professional, you may make a situation more challenged when really it's just you may be more trusted than some of those other individuals. So it's really achieving those linkages. And so that's what we're focusing on in that working group. The fourth working group that came as a direct result of the actual needs assessment was workforce expansion. And that working group is really focused on how do we continue to address just the shortage of practitioners in the Coachella Valley able to serve our community members. And that's across the entire spectrum of services. So it's not just psychiatry and clinicians, but it's, you know, medical assistants and nurse practitioners and anyone who can actually contribute to helping our community members to be able to be served. But also we want to not only attract practitioners to the Coachella Valley, but we want to retain them. So what we're looking at is how early do you start that linkage, which, you know, we're looking at high school, college, when some of these choices are being made, but also looking at how can we better support people who actually complete that journey, whether it's incentives or what kinds of things can be done to make that choice to serve our community an easier choice for them. Now, because those four working groups are really highly focused on short-term strategies, we did recognize that out of that collaborative process, one of the results is going to be that you're going to come up against strategies that take a long time. And strategies that take a long time are usually going to be linked in some way to legislative or bills that are already on the books and are maybe up for reconsideration or some real policy development. So we created a fifth working group that is policy development opportunities. That working group is being chaired by Greg Rodriguez out of Supervisor Perez's office. And we actually have representatives from Eduardo Garcia's office. And I'm meeting actually tomorrow with two representatives from Congressman Ruiz's office. They would like to participate. So it will help to not take strategies that take a long time and sit them on a parking lot list. I'm not a fan of parking lot lists because frankly, I've never seen anything come off of a parking lot list. It gets parked. So we're trying to avoid that happening with such an important endeavor. So this will help us to just have something continuously being worked on, even if it takes a longer period of time.
Thank you for like all of those details. In particular, what sparks my attention is in your work group number 3, we had an incident here in the city of Indio where there was someone, actually, we don't have the full police report, so I couldn't even tell you what was actually happening with this individual. Ended up in police custody with like a mesh bag over their head and died in police custody. And so the community conversation had been like, was there a different response? Was this an episode that could have been handled by different people that weren't the police? So your third work group brings that back up in my head and makes me wonder what the police, like people at Indio Police Department, people at our city council, people across the Coachella Valley who are in positions to be those first responders, what they might share and see as like opportunities, whether for collaboration or handoff or something else. But thank you. I appreciate, again, your detailed work, all of your work groups meeting, and just like the move of the work going on. And thanks to the rest of the staff who support you in this work.
Thank you.
Thank you for all the information provided. Does anyone else have any questions on the Behavioral Health Initiative update? Hearing none, we'll move on to number 4, advancing the district's role in addressing the healthcare needs of Black communities in the Coachella Valley. Is there a new update on this?
Yes, it's kind of a small update. As reported before, that there was, the first group was awarded with 6 students. We have 5 females and one male. 4 are from Palm Springs, 1 from Coachella, 1 from Indio. And right now, One Future is collecting information to begin providing the support services that's necessary and to distribute the start of the scholarship funding. So they're beginning the onboarding of the students. And another couple of highlights where, you know, we had a meeting on November 4th with the Black and African American Healthcare Scholars Advisory Committee. And some things, ideas and other issues were brought up. They were presenting that there's some local issues in the Black and African American community, that a relocation of Black and African American families from our valley are due to not locating job opportunities, and that the parents have expressed mistrust in the school district. So this group is going to be taking the lead into the account, where they're encouraging students to and their parents to explore the health career pathways in college and work with the school system as well. So we have a consensus workshop, and they're working on really supporting with the students. They're doing some vision brainstorming, how they can get more funding, because our $100,000 is only just going to go so far. So they're looking for some long-term funding and how they can build up this fund, the scholarship fund, continue it so it's sustainable. And looking for Black and African American mentors, so the students can see themselves in those professions, hopefully maybe doing some job shadowing and working and interacting with other professionals in the field. So it's coming along, and I'll continue to give you updates as Megan and I both go to these, and Janet does too, to the advisory committee meetings. Questions that you would like me to bring back to the advisory committee, I'm more than happy to.
Questions. The first one, are we allocating money back? Are we putting in more money, or was this a one-time thing?
Right now it's $100,000, but they are looking to see about getting matching funds, develop, you know, to sustain it. They want to get other businesses and other funders. So right now, we're seeding it. It's a pilot program for $100,000. We don't want to keep, you know, leave the students in a lurch, just giving them scholarship dollars and then not have the funding run out and they can't continue with their career. So yes, that's a very important aspect of this whole initiative, is to get other funding, other scholarship dollars into the fund as well.
Thank you. My second question is more for like us, not really One Future. During our strategic planning committee, I was talking about loan repayment that doctors and people who go into the medical profession end up with like really crazy student loans. And board member Director Zavala had shared that she herself is like coming out with $500,000 loan debt. And so in my family, we have someone in that situation who has a law degree, has like $250,000 plus in loan repayment that has to occur at some point. And so what her comments and my like personal situation made me think about was that even though you don't pay your loans until after you graduate, and even though you may be working in a loan repayment program with the federal government, right? You're like serving in a nonprofit, a government entity, you're serving in low-income communities, you are still having to pay. In order for your loans to get forgiven by the government, you still have to make 120 consecutive loan payments. And so this scholarship, those comments, our strategic plan and career, our desire to support careers in healthcare made me wonder if we would ever not consider, it's not what I'm asking, if we would ever do like a study or research on what supporting some of that like loan payment before loan forgiveness for some of these like local women, people of color, a different kind of scholarship, not one while you're in school, but one while you're doing your actual work in our community. Doesn't have to be the full scholarship or anything, but I will share out of my household, $1,000 leaves our household, if not more, every month to these like loans. And even though we're in this like loan, federal loan forgiveness program on our way there, I guess, we'll still have to do this for 10 years, right? If not longer, depending on what happens. So that was sort of the conversation that our like strategic planning and this particular scholarship have had me thinking about, if it's something we would ever not consider, but literally just explore, ask around, is this something that other people do? Just that, that's my only comment.
Well, yeah, Corrado, correct me if I'm sorry, I was gonna say, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think with our health and safety code, healthcare districts can do things like that, do loan repayment and—
Yes, we do. Yes, we can. And in fact, there are a handful of loan repayment programs across the state of California. The best known for physicians and nurses and dentists are out of the California Primary Care Association. They're designed to help recruit health practitioners to work for federally qualified health centers and lookalikes. It's a fairly complex process, and it's typically first come, first served. I think we need to talk more about this, Director Borja, and I think it's wise to look at how we can strengthen the existing healthcare workforce here by offering some type of incentives. We need to understand what are the requirements for some of those that may be already in place. But I think we also need to balance that with what we pay upfront, because what we pay upfront is allowing younger students to get into health careers. I think you can get a faster return on your investment with loan repayment programs. It also requires a much larger investment, but the results are right there. They're good.
Mm-hmm. It's just something that piqued my interest when I heard Director Zavala mentioned her situation, and then thinking about my own family situation, like, yeah, what might it take to keep some of these people in the valley? But thank you both. Also, I guess, Conrado, your comments make me think of the grant that last time I asked if they could like rewrite, where it was like pass-through money, essentially. We like gave some big organization funding and then they brought it back down to the valley. Maybe some kind of partnership in that way.
Yep.
This just piques my interest in that sense, personally, because we're going through it in my family, right? So I kind of understand it and I really don't understand it at the same time.
Yes, absolutely. I think that that is a tool we need to consider because it could offer a match that would prioritize our region. So let's imagine for a minute, let's entertain the idea of working with the California Primary Care Association and asking them, we will offer $5,000, $10,000 on top of your loan repayment if you prioritize our region, and they will benefit from it and we will benefit from it.
That's true.
Okay. Is there any more questions or comments?
I guess my only question is like, can we look into it?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I think we can look into it. And we also need to look into what are the specific needs we have so that we offer something that it's very well targeted.
Yeah, I don't think it's urgent. I think it's important. I don't think it needs to happen by the next time we meet, but thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Conrado. Is there an update on the access to healthcare with Borrego Health Foundation?
Yeah, I put their latest monthly report, which covers the month of
it's on 7-14.
Yeah.
Let me see.
So that covers the month of September. They still continue to have every Friday community meetings, Borrego, with the community members of the Health and Wellness Committee of the Desert Highland Gateway. And they are getting the pediatric has kind of dropped a little bit because the kids are in school now. There was an influx when they were before school started to get their tests and their vaccines and stuff. And they are starting to see more adults now as well, and successfully getting people insured. So they will be reporting out every month. So you will be seeing a monthly report every month. And if there's any questions in the monthly report that you have that I could bring back to them, I'm more than happy to pass that
along. I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if I've already been told this or not, but for dental, I see that they haven't helped anybody. Is that not one of the things that is covered by Borrego Health? Are they not doing their, because I know they have a mobile unit, right, for dental care. I don't know if they're using that for the community also, or are they being referred back to a Borrego space?
I know it's specific to children, and Conrado, I don't know, you might know more if they actually have refurbished some of the mobile units to accommodate adults for dental care as well, or either that, or they do transportation to all of their clinics for those people that might need specialty care. They will deliver them to a clinic that has the either behavior health services or dental services, if whatever is necessary, cardiac services, whatever is necessary.
I think with dental, to answer your question, Director Perez-Gil, Borrego is being very, very careful because that's where they have some issues. So I think that right now they're probably not even offering mobile dental services. They have the state and the Fed and Department of Justice, the FBI, everybody looking into their dental business. So I'm not sure that they're offering mobile services.
It's
okay.
It's on our page 10. They do have like a couple sentences about it. They say due to COVID and the Delta variant, dental professionals continue to be considered of increased occupational risk because of the airways And due to the confined spaces of the Momo Clinic and the risk to our dental staff, Borrego Health did not launch the dental services during this reporting period.
Okay.
Instead, they're referring patients to Cathedral City or DH for dental.
Yeah, to their clinics. Okay. I was just wondering, because I know there's a lot of people like in all the communities that are not sure where they can go to get dental care. So I don't know. I just wanted to know if they were at least getting some kind of information to where they can go to get that, but it's okay. Thank you.
DAP Health has full dental operatories as well. I think they have about 10 of them, that being that they're full FQHC, they take any community member.
What is it called? I'm sorry?
DAP Health, Desert AIDS Project.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know I've heard of them. And then there's a couple of other ones in La Quinta that have helped. But a lot of people don't know that they can go on smilecalifornia.com. And it'll tell them like all the dentists that accept Medi-Cal. So that's what I've been having trouble with, like letting people know that part. But okay. Is there any questions about the information provided for?
I just want to point out that at the bottom of page 11 on number 4, at the top of this on page 9, they tell us that they saw a total of 32 uninsured people. But then on page 11, they tell us that it takes 30 to 45 days to enroll someone and get someone covered through the Medi-Cal Covered California process. This was really cool. Like, this is literally what I was expecting and hoping out of this, right? That people like do gain health insurance. So next time you all talk to Borrego and like have a meeting with them, if you wouldn't mind giving them a high five on my end, this is great, right? Let's genuinely giving people further access because they're showing up to their communities, and it's that long-term care because now people have health access or health insurance access. So this is pretty great. Just wanted to point that out for us.
We will share your kudos with them.
Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to, what was my thing? Committee member comments. So I know Karen just expressed her gratitude for Borrego Springs. Is there any other comment that you may have, Karen?
Or maybe I should have asked this, sorry, during the grant payment schedule. In the audit that we saw last at our last board meeting, the auditor had mentioned that we had not received payments, like our next 1.2 million. I may be off on the dates. Have we received that money or not yet? And I don't know if I'm explaining my question correctly.
Yeah, so we have about 400,000 that is still out and need to be collected, but it's all based on a schedule too. So it's not like it's, you know, a delinquent situation that we're, you know, having to chase it down.
Okay. So none of these funds are coming out of our pockets, essentially.
Correct.
Thank you. I also appreciate the quick acting on some of the comments the auditor had about just like collecting different information from the people, from the organizations that they audited. That was my other question. Will we be collecting those same documents from everyone else as the auditor requested? Great.
That's correct. Yeah, we're actually moving anything going forward. We're collecting everything, and we're also going back and collecting documents back into the prior fiscal year for the others.
Thank you. I think I fell asleep in this section. I appreciate it. That's it.
Thank you. Okay. Well, does anybody else have any comments before I adjourn the meeting? Hearing none, I'll adjourn the meeting at 6:12 p.m. Our next meeting will be held on December 7th, 2021. Thank you all. And have a good night.
Thank you. You as well.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.